the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 64 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Firewatch by Connie Willis. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. I know I say this a lot, but I am very, very excited about this show. Just last week on the show, I was talking about how much I enjoyed the novels that I've been reading by Connie Willis, and how I would love to get in contact with her and be able to present you with one of her stories. And I haven't been able to contact her yet. But quite by accident, I stumbled upon a treasure trove of radio productions that were done for many contemporary authors. Something I had never heard of before. I was looking for a specific episode of X-1 that I was going to present to you today, and I ran across an article that was written on the website SFF Audio, and it was talking about a radio show called Seeing Ear Theater. And you know, most of the time when I talk about a radio show, I talk about an old time radio show, because it is an old time radio show, something from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. I have found some from the 70s and 80s, but those are quite rare. But I had never heard of this Seeing Ear Theater. And I guess it's not a radio drama, because it was produced and distributed over the internet, which has essentially become the radio for today. But let me read you some from this article. And the article was posted by Jesse Willis in 2010. So I don't know if there's any connection there. Probably not. It says, "In the United States, radio drama is virtually dead. But just after the internet blossomed, quote, radio drama briefly revived itself. Between 1997 and 2001, dozens of science fiction and fantasy stories were produced by a dedicated and talented crew of multimedia artists, writers, actors, and musicians, using the Real Player technology to deliver radio drama via streaming audio. And what a revival it was, starting small and building bigger and better productions. Until its demise, the Seeing Ear Theater was arguably much better than the Sci-Fi Channel that spawned it. It managed to capture some of the top living science fiction authors of today, like Harlan Ellison, J. Michael Straczynski, and Kim Stanley Robinson. And Connie Willis, I will add. And Neil Gaiman. It also produced some classic stories from the likes of Frederick Brown, Paul Anderson, and William Tenn." And then he goes on to say that for quite a while, these audio productions could be found at the abandoned Seeing Ear Theater section of the Sci-Fi Channel's website, but that wasn't available anymore after 2007. But then he announces that he's found many of those productions, and he provided several links and summaries to most of the stories, to all the stories that he was able to find. And unfortunately, those links didn't work, but I was able to find all these productions that he was talking about. And let me tell you, there's some good stuff in here. I mean, just amazing stuff from contemporary authors. And it's all under the public domain. And so, when I saw that Firewatch by Connie Willis was on the list, I was just excited. And I knew I wanted to share that with you guys right away. Especially since I'm reading Blackout right now. And this story is a direct correlation. Or I should say that the novels that I talked about last week, namely Doomsday Book, To Say Nothing of the Dog, and then Blackout and All Clear, all stemmed from this short story, Firewatch. And so I'm just so happy to find these sources of great material to bring you here on the show. I love bringing you all the old radio shows because they're fun, but I've been able to find so much other stuff out there by great speculative fiction authors. These shows like Seeing Ear Theater and Mind Webs keeps me excited.
I like this ship!
You know, it's exciting!
So before I go too far, let me talk to you a little bit about Connie Willis herself. Connie Willis was born on New Year's Eve in 1945. She's a member of the Science Fiction Writers of America. And she has won 11 Hugo Awards and 7 Nebula Awards. Her first published story, The Secrets of Santa Titicaca, appeared in Worlds of Fantasy in 1971. And after receiving an NEA grant in 1982, she left her teaching job and became a full-time writer. Connie has written many short stories, novellas, and novels. And as we've already discussed, she's written several pieces that involved time travel by history students at a facility of the future University of Oxford. And that's the basis for this story and for all of the books that I've been talking about. And all of these Oxford time travel stories have won a Hugo Award. And all but To Say Nothing of the Dog have won also the Nebula Award. And so I'm not the only one that likes these books. They've been very appreciated out there by the speculative fiction community. And of course, she's also written many other things. And I'm very anxious to, once I finish reading Blackout and All Clear, to check out several of her other books and stories. The only other story that I've read, as I talked again about last week, was a Christmas story named A Newsletter. It was a great story. Again, I'd like to be able to produce that for you on the podcast here. So I just need to dig a little deeper and find out how I can get a hold of Connie, either through her agent or something. One other little bit of information about Connie is that she currently lives in Greeley, Colorado with her husband. So, let's see. Let's get the old Wamperdime radio tuner. And we'll try to tune into this for you. Shouldn't be too hard. It was only a few years ago. But please, come with me. And let's journey into the London Blitz.
About round about 8 o'clock, I think, and father decided to have a look, see where this plane was circling about. And he opened the back door and looked out and he said, oh, it's dropping incendiaries. I'll go to the front. So he went into the front hall and opened the front door and the bomb went off. And the front door went presumably on top of him. He had a bad cut on his head. Stairs, I think, disappeared. And then he tried to get back into the kitchen because all the lights had gone out. And he said, I'll have to shoulder the door down, which he did. All we heard was a whooshing noise. Didn't hear a scream of a bomb coming down. Just this whoosh, and then nothing.
An original presentation from America's premier audio theater group. Seeing Ear Theater.
What time period do you wish to review, Mr. Bartholomew?
21st century, 2014, London.
There was no London, England in 2014, Mr. Bartholomew.
Oh, right. 2013, then. Christ.
Far away and long ago, London town went up in smoke. Radiation slit her wrists. She was slain by communists. Communists. Communists.
Computer, pause.
Paused.
Reset to default theme, please.
Default settings already engaged.
Oh, bloody hell. Theme selection.
Presentation theme one, heartfelt diva. Presentation theme two, pop melancholy. Presentation theme three, DJ Lifehammer and Faith. Presentation theme four.
Haven't you got something more neutral?
History is never neutral, Mr. Bartholomew.
Oh, brilliant. Just brilliant. Choose theme two, then.
In late September of 2013, an unexpected heat wave had fallen over London. Hot days gave way to muggy nights. A sweltering miasma settled on the city. Then, on September the 23rd, the heat wave broke. Autumn came in. The city breathed a sigh of relief. On September the 24th, a glorious fall day, young Natasia Karenkova, posing as a Russian tourist, visited St. Paul's Cathedral for morning prayers. Boris Jacobs, historian at the World Trust.
Karenkova was a part of a disaffected minority who split from the remains of Russia's old-line communists in an attempt to jumpstart what they thought of as a failed socialist revolution. These neo-communists resorted to terrorist tactics, culminating in the use of the portable nuclear device known as the pinpoint bomb on London.
My mother and I were on the train headed back from the country that day. As we gazed out the window, the whole sky lit up with a flash and there was a great roar and a rush of wind. This frightened me as I was only 6 years old and quite terrified of storms. I began to cry. Annabel Moseley Braun, 2057.
A cloud of radioactive gas arose from devastated London and, carried by winds off the North Sea, settled over Central Europe. Close to 10 million people died from radiation poisoning alone. Worldwide grain harvests were blighted, and millions more suffered the pangs of starvation.
My children died. I asked Herr God, why have you saw fit for me to live after taking my little ones away? I received no answer. Then all the animals died. Even the cats. Even the mice. Lucas Gertler, 2048.
Natasia Karenkova, arrested at a bus station in Bucharest, was found guilty of crimes against humanity by an international tribunal at The Hague.
Before we pass judgment, does the prisoner have anything to say of a less dogmatic nature?
People who don't like communism have never tried communism.
Very well, then. Natasia Karenkova, for your crimes against 11 million men, women, and children in the destruction of London, England, and irrecoverable radiation damage to the flora and fauna of the northern hemisphere of planet Earth, this court hereby sentences you to a life term without parole to consist of solitary imprisonment. And to be served in the Human Rights Offenders Compound in Nuremberg, Germany. And Natasia Karenkova, since you have poisoned yourself with the very fate you sought to visit on others, may God have mercy on your soul.
God? God is a storybook tale. History will judge me, not your God. History!
history?
Yes, Mr. Bartholomew.
This isn't a study of history, sir. It's a suicide run to oblivion. I'm not prepared.
It is exactly 2 o'clock Greenwich Standard by the Royal Observatory Cesium apparatus. All departmental timepieces recalibrated.
Travelling in time is not like taking the tube, Mr. Bartholomew.
All my studies are out the window. How can I possibly...
Either you report at 4 o'clock, or you don't go at all.
But I'm not ready. Look, Professor Dunworthy, it took me 4 years to prepare to travel with St. Paul. St. Paul, the saint, not St. Paul's, the church. It's an apostrophe, St. Paul, St. Paul's.
These things happen, Mr. Bartholomew. I assure you that 1940 in England will be as noteworthy as walking down some dusty road in Roman Israel.
1940? I thought... I was sure, I mean, the bomb, the pinpoint nuclear bomb.
Yes.
When I found out yesterday I'd been reassigned, I thought you were sending me back to the year prior to the destruction of London by the neo-communists.
What made you think that, Mr. Bartholomew?
I just assumed that there was so much data that was destroyed along with London that you'd want me to collect some of it. That's what historians do, isn't it? Collect data, for God's sake. 1940, that was...
World War II, Mr. Bartholomew. The Battle of Britain. The Nazi Blitz.
I'm in classical studies. I can barely remember who was fighting in the Second World War. Wasn't there something about the Jews?
The Holocaust.
You see, I'm completely unqualified.
Mr. Bartholomew, get hold of yourself. The department regrets the mix-up.
Mix-up?
If mix-up there was.
But
here is something that might be of use.
A book.
My book.
Your book.
It's about St. Paul's Cathedral, Mr. Bartholomew. The idea of St. Paul's through the ages. Now, you'll be leaving in 2.5 hours, so there isn't time for you to actually read it.
No time? That's a good one. He says there isn't time.
But you should just be able to download it into your long-term memory using an endorphin booster. Now, this means that you won't be able to recall the data on demand.
No, of course not.
And you may not be able to bring back any of it at all. But some of the information might bubble up, as it were. It might prove of some small use to you.
And that's it?
Mr. Bartholomew, you are not the only student here at Balliol demanding of my time this afternoon. You are in a bit of perhaps understandable distress, but I assure you that I am quite aware of time's winged chariot drawing nigh.
As Marlowe put it, to his coy mistress.
I suggest you take that booster and jack into the book, Mr. Bartholomew. But remember, they'll be expecting you at the transfer facilities precisely at 4 p.m. to get you prepared for your 4:30 jump. Don't be late.
Oh.
Professor Dunworthy, your 2 o'clock has arrived. 3 minutes late.
Mr. Bartholomew, it's time for you to leave.
It's time. Time, you say?
Silence and humility. These are the sacred burdens of the historian, Mr. Bartholomew.
Gems from the master. Do you have any idea when the bombs fall, Professor Dunworthy, so I might have a fighting chance at avoiding them?
Good afternoon, Mr. Bartholomew.
Good afternoon, sir.
And Mr. Bartholomew?
Yes?
You're going to love St. Paul's.
Bartholomew, right on time. Your uncle's letter said you would be arriving this afternoon. Welcome to the volunteers.
Thank you, sir. I'm a little bit frazzled from the long trip, I'm afraid.
Can't be helped. Can't be helped. We'll get Langby to show you round, shall we?
The cots came. RP's brought them.
Sorry? Harpies?
ARP. You'd have thought they were doing us a favour, all high heels and hoity-toity. You made us miss our tea, love, one of them said to me. Yes, well, and a good thing too, I told him. You look like you could stand to lose a stone or two.
Did you set the cots up in the crypt, then? Mr. Bartholomew, you just got in from Wales.
Pardon me, sir, but shouldn't we... Those are bombs, aren't they?
Oh, they're bombs, all right.
I mean, they sound so close.
Close!
Close, he says.
Yeah, this is a good day, Mr. Bartholomew.
Well, this is where you'll lay your head. And the gentleman in the crypt next door to you happens to be the good Admiral Nelson himself.
Lord Nelson. Amazing.
Oh, we're all in the same pickle as the lords and ladies down here in the crypt, ain't we, Bartholomew?
Yes.
Now, Nelson here, they say he's packed in alcohol. I wonder, when the crypt takes a direct hit, will he burn like a bloody torch?
I'd rather not think about it, if you don't mind. Say, where can a fellow get a bite to eat?
Oh, what's that?
Why, it's a cat.
That's a cat? Of course it is. What do you want about?
Does she bite? Cats are supposed to have carried diseases, you know, infectious diseases, the plague.
You've never seen a cat before?
Well, of course I have. She just startled me, that's all.
Right. Right then, let's have a look at the dome. When the first St. Paul's burned down, old Christopher Wren, the architect, stood in the smoking rubble and told a workman to bring him a stone from the graveyard.
Langby.
A grave marker to use as a new cornerstone for the new cathedral he was determined to put up.
Langby, old man.
I shall rise again, the gravestone said.
Langby, don't you think we've climbed high enough?
Nonsense. You have to get to the top of the dome to hear the full effect of the Whispering Gallery. Besides, you were just on the roof.
But the roof is flat, well, mostly flat, and you don't have to look over the edge. Here inside the dome, it's all edge.
You can hear me whispering because of the shape of the dome. The sound waves are reinforced around the perimeter of the dome.
Langby.
Let me tell you, it sounds like the very crack of doom up here in a rage.
I think I'm not feeling so well, Langby. Please, I think I'd better...
The dome is 107 feet across. Right, here we are at the very top. It's 80 feet above the nave down there.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Bartholomew, what's wrong?
80 feet doesn't sound like much. It's got to be more than that.
You're gripping that rail strong enough to break the bones of your hand if you don't watch it.
I can't let go. The whole thing will fall in with me.
Oh, you'd better come down with me.
I'm a historian, for God's sake.
Bartholomew, come here.
I'm a historian. I'm not supposed to be here.
Come on, take my hand. Take it. Yeah, that's right.
I thought...
You can. Now, come on. We're going down, mate. We're going down.
St. Paul's Cathedral, symbol and reality, Dunworthy, 2257, Oxford University Press, page 493. Symptoms of bombing victim. Stage 1, shock, stupefaction, unawareness of injuries. Words may not make sense except to victim.
Whatever you say, Bartholomew, just hang on to me.
Stage 2, shivering, nausea, injuries and losses felt, return to reality.
We're going down now. We're almost there.
Stage 3, talkativeness that cannot be controlled, desire to explain shock behavior to rescuers.
Crew squadron, 135 knots, sort of 5 points, 5 minutes to gate, over.
Blue leader, blue 3, acknowledged, 5 minutes to gate.
Blue leader, blue 5, I've got bogeys, bandits 5 o'clock.
Staffelsturm, ich berühre, verdammte Briten, ich berühre.
Scramble, crew squadron.
Freie Bahn, Sturm 1, freie Bahn.
Mara Blume.
Victor, Sturmkommandeur.
Charlie-ho!
Pauke, Satzen Sie trinken.
I'm hit! I'm going in! Paulino! I'm going down! Paulino, stop, Commander!
The boys on the ground got one of those bastards!
Sturm staff, Sturm Commander here. Donnerkill!
Rope yourself in, man, for Christ's sake!
Not time! Get the sand around this! I'm coming aboard!
Bartholomew, over here!
Yes, here I am.
Now, none of your nonsense. You get ready of that stirrup pump.
I'm ready.
Now, here's a lesson for you. You shovel the sand round the incendiary bomb.
I see.
You cover it up, like so. Right, now I'll stand back. Now hit it with the water.
Is it working?
The water's getting it.
It doesn't sound like it's working.
Keep pumping, damn you. Oh, by God, you put it out.
I put it out?
Yeah, that's right, you did.
I put out a bomb. I saved St. Paul's.
Yeah, well, come on then. One bomb at a time.
We'll save her. One bomb at a time.
Shake your ass, Bartholomew.
I'm coming.
That's it. Now, come on, you take the shovel this time, Bartholomew, and I'll have at it with the car.
My silly hesitation is best left in the past. Such a lucky guy, moon up in the sky, alone at last.
Come here. Cat. Here. Cat. I ordered you to come here. Are you not a domesticated animal? Respond to my voice, will you? That's right. Now, stay there. Stay there. Hey!
Really?
What's so bloody funny?
That's not the way to catch a cat.
Well, obviously. Bless you.
You act like you've never seen a cat before.
Of course, I've seen cats.
That bucket had some water in it. Cats hate water.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Everybody knows that cats hate water. Here, kitty. Here, Snooky.
Well, I thought it might eat the mouse that's down in the crypt.
The crypt? Oh, come here, kitty. Oh, we won't hurt you, Snooky. Come here now.
You talk to it as if it were a child.
Come here, Snooky. Don't you listen to the wet bucket man. So, what is this crypt?
Oh, we live down there. I'm a volunteer.
The fire watch?
We call ourselves volunteers.
Volunteers? You are not paid?
No. What's the matter with that?
It's just that I read about St. Paul's and the fire watch in the London newspapers, and I thought perhaps there is a position for me in the canteen, a paying position.
Oh, I'm afraid we don't have a canteen.
That won't do, then. I want to help Great Britain in every way possible, but I cannot take on volunteer work. I've got my little brother to think of.
Bless you.
I'm sorry. It's awful cold.
Hey, well, it's chilly, but not really cold.
No, I mean my sneezing and coughing and such.
Oh, a viral infection, right.
What a strange one you are.
Well, you certainly don't sound as if you're from around here. I've learned a great deal in the last few weeks here in London. If I didn't know better, I'd think...
That I'm German? I am. Oh, I was. That honor has now been denied to my brother and me.
I'm afraid I don't understand, after all.
A kind Norwegian fisherman brought Henry and me across the channel at great peril to himself.
But why would you want to come to England?
I want to take Henry to America. But for the moment, London will have to do. Oh, come here, Snooky. That's right.
You're picking it up.
Of course I am.
But I thought, well, animals were dirty. Maybe you caught your cold from touching an animal.
You sure act like you haven't seen many animals.
Oh, well, I haven't.
Where are you from?
Wales.
Look. Scratch the kitten. Behind her ears, like so.
Like this?
Not so hard.
All right.
There now, Snooky. There's no need to be afraid of the Bucket Man. What's your name, Bucket Man?
Bartholomew.
I'm Frida. Frida Silberstein.
Pleased to meet you, Frida.
Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you going to ask me to go for a bite to eat?
I would like to, very much. It's only that they didn't give me near enough money when they sent me here, and I
understand. But walking costs nothing.
Walking?
As in, to go for a stroll? Isn't that the English expression?
Oh, certainly. Would you like to go for a stroll? Tomorrow I'm off duty in the afternoon, and I'm sure that... Well, that is, I'm fairly sure I have enough money to stand us both a drink at the pub.
I am going to look for a paying job tomorrow morning myself. But I may be free after 12 o'clock noon.
Should I meet you?
I will stop by here. You look as if you really need some fresh air. And I, well, it has been a long time since I've spent an afternoon just walking without urgently trying to get somewhere.
Well, all right. We'll take a walk and have a drink then, in the afternoon. About what time?
About this time would be nice.
Oh, that would be...
Swell? I think that's the word you're trying to say.
That would be swell, Frida.
I must be going. Take the kitty.
What, me? Take it how?
In your arms. As you would hold a baby.
Like this?
Exactly what sort of cats do they have in Wales?
Odd Welsh cats.
I will come and see you tomorrow, Bartholomew.
See you, Frida. What am I supposed to do with you now? She could have told me how to put a cat down now, couldn't she? Okay, cat, just let me bend down. Ow! Why, you beast, how the hell did you do that? Some kind of retractable razors in your toes. Bloody hell. Ouch. Damn it.
Can I ask you
Langby,
something?
I didn't see you behind the tapestry.
I was dusting off the plaster. Somebody's got to do it, and the charwoman can't be bothered now, can she?
Well, I was just...
Yeah, making free with that Jerry girl. I was watching you, all right.
That was totally innocent. I mean, she only wanted to know if there was some kind of job... And it's none of your affair, anyway.
No. But this cathedral is. It's my part in the war, and I love this place. St. Paul's is my affair.
And mine, too.
So, Bartholomew, like your Fraulein said... Cats hate water.
Yes, I'm aware of that fact now.
Everybody in England knows it, even the stupid Welsh.
Well, I've got duty tonight. I'm going to fill the stirrup pumps.
Yeah, you do that. Welshman.
And now... it's time for another episode in the adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Dr. Watson, what have you got in store for us tonight?
Well, Mr. Donaldson, tonight I'm going to tell you the adventure of the Nazi imposter. You see, Holmes and I were recently approached by a mysterious gentleman from the Home Office who proceeded to provide us with the most...
Up and out of mates! Well, come on then, one bomb at a time. Shake your ass, Bartholomew.
Here's another one.
Ah! Shrapnel! Bloody hot shrapnel!
Stop running, you bloody fool!
Get a hose on him!
He won't hold still!
Mama!
Stay away from that edge, mate!
Stay back! Back from there!
Good God!
He fell! He just fell! Over!
Let's get...
It's on the rampart!
Bring that pump, I'll get the buckets!
Right, this one's ours, Welshman.
Are you speaking to me?
You said you were from Bleeding Wales, didn't you? Pick up that damn shovel and follow me, we've got a bomb to put out.
One bomb at a time.
That's the idea of it. You do get the idea, don't you?
Then another bomb falls, you put it out, then another.
Bring the bloody shovel!
That man just fell off St. Paul's Cathedral.
Yes. Teaches the rest of us to watch our step, doesn't it? St. Paul's is what matters.
He's dead.
Yes, he's bloody dead.
He's really, actually dead.
If you don't pick up that shovel and follow me, I'll kick your ass back to Wales. Or wherever it is you really do come from. Mate.
One bomb at a time. Until there's only one bomb. Only one bomb left. And no firewall.
Come on, damn it! Get some sand around it.
Sand, sure. Sand. Because all the sand we've got to pour on the fire. And it won't be enough. St. Paul's will be lost. There won't be anything left.
That's the idea, isn't it? Burn St. Paul's to the ground?
What?
Isn't that the plan?
Whose plan?
Why, Hitler's, of course. Stand back. Hitler's plan? Who do you think I meant? Watch out! It's not a bad plan, actually.
What are you saying?
But of course we won't let it happen. That's what the Fire Watch is here for. To see that it doesn't happen. Right, Bartholomew?
My assignment.
What's that you say?
I know what my assignment is now.
What assignment would you be talking about, mate?
Nothing. Nothing, Langley.
Go and fill up the water, Bartholomew.
I'll help you shovel the sand.
No, you go and fill up the stirrup pump.
I'm coming right back, Langley.
Well, you'd better.
I'm coming back quickly, remember that?
Yeah, I'll remember. You queer fish Welshman. That's what you actually are.
Here is the Midnight News, and this is Adele Donaldson reading it. Today cost the German Air Force more dearly than any other for over a month. In daylight and night raids, at least 200 enemy aircraft were launched in raids against London and southeast England. Over half of them were shot down. It was officially announced by 10 o'clock tonight, 105 of them were known to be destroyed by our fighters and anti-aircraft. Hey,
two of them.
Thank you.
There is a table free, Bartholomew.
Oh, right.
Haven't you got anything better?
Not a drop of anything, but this horror.
Well, pour me a pint of the horror, then.
Here's a place. This is so nice.
This little pub?
Yes, this little pub.
Oh, well then. Cheers.
Yes, cheers. So, oh, you really think that this Langby is a German spy?
Oh, I do, yes. A Nazi operative.
But how can you be sure?
He wants to burn down St. Paul's. He said as much. And he's perfectly placed. He's a St. Paul's fire watcher.
Achoo!
Oh, bless you.
Oh, this awful cold. But still...
Langby's just looking for a chance, waiting until he's alone and can safely ignore an incendiary bomb. I want you to help me find him out.
You want me to help you?
Speak to him in German. See if he recognizes what you say.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why not? You're German.
I cannot and will not speak German to anyone in England, Bartholomew. Henry and I are already in enough danger as it is.
But Langby must be a Nazi. They wouldn't have sent me here with no purpose, would they? My assignment is to stop Langby from burning down St. Paul's. That's got to be what I'm here for.
I wasn't able to finish my schooling, but I think it is a logical problem.
Bless you.
Aren't you assuming what it is you wish to prove?
Bless you. But are you sure you're all right?
It's just that viral infection. Can't seem to shake it. But go on now.
The graduate students never say a word when they come back from their practicums. They won't answer the most basic question.
What question is that?
Is there a fundamental, immutable past, or do we as historians make it? Must we interfere boldly, or must we do nothing?
Interfere boldly? You are the one who is sounding like a spy now, Bartholomew.
But St. Paul's didn't burn down, not during the Second World War, so I have to make sure that it doesn't.
You have lost me.
My purpose for being here, to save the past, of course.
Shh now, mates.
Attention. The government has issued an announcement under the following notices. Closing all places of public activity. All theatres, cinemas, and meeting places other than places of worship are to be shut immediately and until further notice. They are being closed because if they were hit by a bomb, large numbers would be killed or injured. People are sincerely requested not to group together unnecessarily at any time or place. Attention.
Well, assignment or no assignment, Bartholomew, I would like you to walk me back to Marble Arch.
The tube station by the park?
Henry, my little brother, saved our place for us there. For the evening. Help me with my coat, please.
Here you are. You don't have anywhere to live?
We came here with nothing, Bartholomew.
But where is your family? Where are your parents?
In Poland. They were taken to a place called Auschwitz in April. Please, let us go, Bartholomew.
Yes. Let me get the door. The Holocaust!
Pardon?
Auschwitz. It's a concentration camp, isn't it?
They call it a relocation camp. We were assured it would be for the best, but something terrible has happened to my family. I feel it.
You're Jewish.
Please, lower your voice.
What? Why? You're in England. You've escaped.
Don't you know that it is worse to be Jewish than it is to be German here in Britain? Where are you from, that you would not know this?
Worse to be Jewish? It's 1940, for Christ's sake.
The people blame the Jews for angering Hitler so much that he started the war.
Oh, you've got to be joking.
No. Still, you British do not have relocation camps for Jews. My brother and I are lucky to be here. We would be dead along with everyone else.
if we had stayed in Berlin or in Norway. They were not stop hunting us. Well, I have found a job.
Really? That's wonderful.
I'm working for the WVS in one of the mobile canteens that go to the fires. Well, here we are.
But it's just...
a hole in the ground, I know. I have to remove Henry from here somehow. But for the moment, it is all we have.
Well, good night then, Frida.
I had a wonderful time. It was as if I were 20 again.
How old are you?
I am 22. But a much older woman, I'm afraid.
Bless you.
Good night, Bartholomew. Thank you for a lovely time.
Good night. Frida. She could be my great-grandmother's grandmother. Her name's Frida.
A million happy chances, her fate with mine is cast. Sweetest morning dew, innocent and true, alone at last.
Attention, whether you retrieve your water from the river, or whether the water comes out of a tap, will you please see that the water is boiled before you drink it or otherwise use it? Any WCs or drains that are inoperative are not to be used. Please dig a hole and get rid of the refuse in your garden.
A kinder invitation card.
Malpuma, Malpuma!
What happened?
The crypt's been hit.
Hold on. Where's Bartholomew?
His cot's been covered. He's dead.
Bartholomew, I can hear him.
He's gone, Langley.
Bartholomew!
Who are you looking for?
Bartholomew, his cot was right here and I can hear him.
I'm here. I'm all right. I moved my cot out of the transept.
Bartholomew, it's you.
Of course it's me, Langby.
Then what? What's this?
Only the gas ring.
Blast it, the damn gas ring.
Here, I'll turn the bloody thing off at the wall valve.
Bloody gas ring.
You saved St. Paul's and me, after all. We might all have been asphyxiated.
I shouldn't have saved you.
What?
I shouldn't have saved you, Bartholomew. I have my duty to think of. My duty to the cathedral.
Langby, you're bleeding.
I shouldn't have.
You'd better lie down.
Bartholomew, there you are. They told me I would find you here. What has happened?
It was a high explosive bomb. It blew a hole in the choir roof. Some of the marble statue is broken.
Are you all right? Did something hit you in the head?
Maybe I wish it had.
Do not speak like that, Bartholomew. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm digging a grave.
It is such a small hole you've dug.
Small grave for a little thing. I was going to wrap her in my muffler, but then I thought I'd just use that scrap of blanket because... Don't look at her, Frida. You've seen enough awful sights.
What is it?
The cat.
Oh, no. Poor kitty.
Found her this morning in the rubble. Not a scratch on her.
How spooky.
But then I bent to pet her like you showed me, and she was all jelly under the skin, like a sack of jelly. Concussion, they say. They wouldn't let me bury her in the crypts.
I am sorry, Bartholomew.
She belongs there. She's just as honorable as the rest of us down there.
Let me help you.
All right. The dead shall bury their dead.
No, Bartholomew. Not us. We are alive.
Are we alive? Are you, Frida?
I will not stop trying to live.
But perhaps I'm already sleeping in my grave, and this is the worst dream I've ever had. Oh, I would really like to wake up if it is.
So would I. Look, Frida, I know it's not much. It's not anything, really, but I want you to have my muffler. I keep thinking about how your cold gets worse and worse.
Bartholomew, you will never get another.
I suppose I won't.
They start to ration clothes and wool, too.
Please, take the muffler.
All right. Well, let us put the poor thing in the ground.
I'm really glad you're here. I thought I was going to be burying her alone and no one else would know.
Isn't it strange that...
Well, it helps when someone else knows. It shouldn't, but it does. Poor Kennet.
I found this copy of The Worker under his cot mattress when I was changing the linens.
I can't believe it. So he's a communist?
Bloody communists. Helping Hitler, they are. Talking against the king. Stirring up trouble in the shelters. Traitors, that's what they are. Tea?
No, thanks.
I'll pour me own, then.
The communists love England, same as you.
They love England?
Oh, they don't love nobody but themselves, bloody selfish lot. Here, spot of that tea, eh?
Here you go.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to hear they were ringing Hitler up on the telephone.
Hello, Adolf.
Yeah, boy, what is?
Here's where to drop the bombs, old boy.
Just because they speak their minds don't mean they burn down old St. Paul's, does it now?
Of course it doesn't.
Do you know what the communists did? Will do?
It's the Jerrys that are doing their bloody best to burn her down tonight. 6 incendiaries so far, and one almost went into that great hole over the choir.
Communists, I should have known. I'm going back up with you.
No, you're not. You've been standing double watches for the past 3 weeks. I don't want the walking dead on the roof with me. You're getting as loopy in the head as those poor buggers huddling down the tubes.
I'm going up.
You're getting some sleep is what you're doing.
Listen to the man, Bartholomew.
As if I could sleep. As if I could sleep. Marble Arch.
What's that?
I remember now from Dunworthy's book, Marble Arch hit, 18 killed by bomb, 20 killed by flying tiles.
What are you talking about, Bartholomew?
I have to get over there.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
I have to save Frida. They're going to bomb Marble Arch.
You can't leave now, you dirty...
Have to get to Marble Arch. No sirens yet. Taxi! Marble Arch, the tube station, hurry! You shouldn't be here. 20 killed by flying tiles.
It's you who shouldn't be here.
It's you who should move on. This is our spot by the entranceway. It's our family's spot of ground.
I've got to find her.
Find who?
Frida. She's Jewish.
No bloody Jews around here.
She has a brother. I don't know what he looks like.
Well, Jew or not, you'll never find her down there, mate. This house has been marble arch hundreds of times.
Frida!
What? Easy.
Oh, Frida!
You're stepping on me, blanket, mate.
Frida!
Not the poor man's sleep. It's enough with bums and the trains. Now you come to hollow in our ears.
Frida!
But will it never stop?
I'll never find her here. There's too many people. I can't save her. I can't save any of them. Got to get out! Get out of here before it's too late!
Didn't I tell you?
What?
Didn't I tell you they'd help down there?
And worse, the farther down you get.
Oh, that's so, that's so.
Did you find your chip?
Got to get out!
Bartholomew?
Frida! You're here!
Yes, I'm here.
And your brother, Henry?
I've just sent him off to Bath. There is a family there. They agreed to help us. They had no place for me, but... Oh, Henry will be safer there.
Send him to Bath? Henry's alive? You're alive.
I am still alive.
Bartholomew?
Oh, Dunworthy's book. I must have had a recall error. Not surprising, I've hardly been sleeping. Watching Lambie all the time. Putting out those bloody bombs night after night. I must have remembered wrongly. I'm really quite at my wit's end. I feel like I've been mistaken about everything regarding this assignment. It's this bloody war. You never sleep. You fall in love in impossible situations. Everything seems to glow with destiny and doom.
Bartholomew, you need to rest.
Where's your muffler?
I send it with Henry. I have found a place. I go there often. It is very restful there.
I would like that. Is it near?
No. It is quite a ways from here. Down by the water. But we can walk. We can go there and sit on the bed of the sea. Listen to him. He plays it every night that I've been here. He must live in one of the ruined flats up there.
The tide's so far out tonight.
And what a lovely moon.
Bomber's moon, the Bonsies call it.
It surely seems as if the music is coming from up there, doesn't it? The old man in the moon plays his silver horn, my papa used to say.
I can't shake the feeling something's going to happen tonight. Something from Dunworthy's book. But I can't bring it to mind.
You're talking strangely again, Bartholomew.
Really, I just wish there was something...
Just kiss me, Mr. Bartholomew.
Kiss you?
I know who you are.
Who I am? How could you know who I am?
Well, you are not from Wales.
It's so obvious that even a excuse me, but even you can tell?
Yes. Kiss me, Bartholomew. I have dreamed of it. Being kissed by something, someone so pure.
Frida, I'm not pure. I'm just a confused man.
Do not know much about your kind. Papa told us of the angels and archangels from the study of the Kabbalah, and I have always felt their presence, especially now in these times.
Frida, what are you talking about?
It was the cat that gave you away. You had never seen one before.
No, I'd never seen a cat before I came here. They're extinct where I come from.
So there would be no kitties in heaven? Pity.
Heaven, Frida, you don't think that...
That you are an angel? Of course I do.
But...
I am not easily fooled, Bartholomew. Not any longer. There is something about you that is... Well, not of this world. You are from a place beyond this world, I feel. I have always been sensitive to such things. An angel.
Yes, all right. A kind of angel.
What can you tell me about heaven? Is it as my papa said, the ten sephirot catching and forming the light of God?
No, I don't know. I don't know what heaven is like.
What can you show me?
Frida, I can't save you. I can't do anything. I don't have that power. The only power I have is the power to know things, to know things in advance. And that ability comes and goes. It isn't under my control.
Can you tell me if I will live through this fighting or die? What will happen to my brother?
I don't know.
Can you tell me anything?
You were right. Auschwitz is a factory for murder. We will still remember the horror of it for a long time to come. The Jews, many will die, millions.
My family.
England will live, at least for a time. The Nazis will do terrible things, but they'll be utterly defeated. But this is not about you. It's just history lessons. I don't know anything about you.
It is a bit of hope, Bartholomew. You're certain of this knowledge?
Pretty certain.
Well, then we have to celebrate the victory.
Celebrate?
Kiss me, Bartholomew. You want to, don't you?
I want to very much.
It is not a wrong thing, is it? To kiss an angel?
No, it isn't wrong.
Achoo! Oh, dear.
Don't worry about it, Frida. Kiss me again.
My angel.
Frida, I don't know anything about you. Who you are, what you'll be, and me, I'm just nothing.
You are my angel.
No, Frieda, not an angel. Oh. Well, then, it's our friends from across the channel.
Bartholomew.
I have to get back to St. Paul's. I have my duty.
I know.
I'll see you again soon. Bless you.
Oh, Bartholomew, I hope so.
I've got to go. I'll see you again. I'm sure of it.
Kiss me again. For luck. Or whatever it is that your kind has instead of luck.
I need luck as much as the next bloke.
Luck, then.
I've got to go. And you should get indoors.
Luck, Bartholomew. And love.
I'll see you again.
I don't think so. Mein Engel.
There's no civilians allowed up here. Some pauses for it.
I'm Firewatch.
Go on then. Good luck to you.
Over there?
He's not here.
Keep looking.
What is it?
We can't find him.
Can't find who?
Langley.
He must have fallen over the side.
But Langley would never do that. He's too careful.
There's another one. Come on.
Right behind you.
Langley? Langley, can you hear me? I'm not going to let you burn it down, Langley. Do you hear that? I won't let you burn St. Paul's. Langley!
Bloody hell!
Langley!
Bugger up, you bloody Nazi!
Where are you?
I'm down here in the bleeding corridor.
My God, Langley! You must be 50 feet down. How on earth did you get down there? Did you fall? Of
course I didn't bloody fall. I'd be dead if I'd fallen now, wouldn't I? I'll use that rope you're standing on.
I'm coming down!
Oh, God, 80 feet, 80 feet to the ground.
Ow! Ow! Strike! Ow!
Rope in your hands!
Ow!
Stop, you rat Nazi!
Are you all right?
Yes, so much the worse for you.
What are you lying on there? Oh, dear God, Langley.
It's no use. I put it out. I know you were counting on this one. It was bound to happen sooner or later with all these roofs.
Langley, let me turn you over.
Oh! It was bound to happen, but I went after it. What are you going to tell your friends?
My God, you put the incendiary out with your body.
These bloody asbestos coats are good for something after all. Why don't you just leave me here? A bit of overexposure and I'll be done for by morning. Or would you rather do your dirty work in private?
You think I'm a spy?
I've been on to you since that day in the gallery. I knew you weren't afraid of heights. You just came down without any fear of heights when you saw I'd ruined your precious plans.
Anybody down there?
We're here, Langley and me.
You?
Send for an ambulance. Langby's been burned.
All right, hang on down there.
I should have let you smother in the crypt. You may have fooled the others, but you didn't fool me. You know what gave you away?
What?
Everybody knows cats hate water. Everybody but a dirty Nazi spy. You made a big mistake telling me that Marble Arch was going to be bombed. Wanting to save your WBS tart. You're a rotten, dirty spy, Bartholomew. Your friends already blew it up in September. They'd finally reopened it for a bloody air raid shelter. You should have killed me. I'll tell.
Langley?
Langley! Will you get that bloody ambulance now?
Coming!
Langley! Langley! Langley, where are you?
Mr. Bartholomew, please prepare yourself for your final examination.
What? Where am I? What are you talking about?
Oxford, Mr. Bartholomew. You're at Oxford, a graduate student in history. Have you forgotten about history, Mr. Bartholomew?
Forgotten?
Commence with the examination.
Number of incendiaries that fell on St. Paul's Cathedral in 1940.
Number of landmines.
Number of high explosive bombs.
What the bloody hell?
Number of volunteers on first watch.
Number of volunteers on second watch.
Casualties.
Fatalities.
They make no sense!
What's that, Mr. Bartholomew?
Where are the questions about Frieda, about Langby?
You should be answering questions, Mr. Bartholomew, not asking them.
There aren't any questions about the people.
Oh, of course there are.
Number of casualties.
Number of fatalities.
Langby put out a fire with his own body. Frieda has a cold that keeps getting worse. One cat. Fatalities includes one cat.
Fauna and flora affected is in an upcoming question, Mr. Bartholomew.
But don't you care about them all, Langby, Frieda?
They're important from a statistical point of view, but as individuals, they are hardly relevant to the course of history.
You bloody bastard!
Oh, Mr. Bartholomew, you've broken my glasses.
Restraints activated.
Of course they're relevant! Let me go!
Turn off the restraints.
Restraints deactivated.
Of course they're relevant! They are history! Not all these bloody numbers! They're back there in the past with nobody to save them. They can't see their hands in front of their faces and there are bombs falling down on them and you tell me they aren't important. Langby saved St. Paul's. Frieda, I loved her. Do you understand that? Human love!
Mr. Bartholomew, you've broken my glasses.
You're not a historian!
If this unpleasantness continues, I can have the restraints reactivated.
You're nothing but a dirty Nazi spy! To hell with you, Professor Dunworthy!
Mr. Bartholomew, please come here.
I wouldn't be a historian if you paid me! Shut the hell up!
Context not understood.
Pause.
Show me Frieda, would you?
Frieda. 3 million entries under 25,000 subcategories.
Frieda Silberstein.
Frieda Silberstein. 120,000 entries under 3,400 subcategories.
St. Paul's, then. The fire watch.
Throughout London, there were human-shaped shadows burned into the ground. The people who cast those shadows instantly vaporized. A single stone, dating from World War II and the Battle of Britain, was left at Ground Zero following the 2013 nuclear inferno.
Oh, good Lord.
The stone had a carbon dusting on it. Speculations are that these are the remains of a tourist visiting St. Paul's Cathedral, who was leaning over to read the stone's inscription. Melinda Deering, historian at the Home Museum.
We know from other records that the stone originally said, "Remember the men and women of St. Paul's Watch, who by the grace of God saved this cathedral." But the carbon shadow, which testing shows to be human remains, has blotted out part of the lettering, and now the fire watch stone simply reads, "Remember the men and women of St. Paul's Watch."
Pause.
Seems
just
to be a
pause, computer, will you? How will I ever find her?
There are several advanced search strategies that can refine the information retrieval process and facilitate location of the data you wish to access.
Provided that data exists.
That is correct.
And as any historian worth his salt could tell you, provided one can interpret those data in a way that leads to a full understanding of their context and implications.
That is your function, not mine, Dr. Bartholomew.
What?
To repeat, that is your function, not...
What did you call me?
Your voice print account identifies you as Dr. Bartholomew, Greenwich Transnational ID number 8DN33R97F, postdoctoral fellow at Balliol, Oxford, with a Class 1 archive access rating and a Class 2 records emanation.
Postdoctoral?
That is correct. Dr. Bartholomew?
Bartholomew, to see Dunworthy.
He is expecting you. Enter.
Professor Dunworthy.
Please sit down.
I prefer to stand.
Please sit down, Mr. Bartholomew.
All right.
Of course I gave you a first, Bartholomew, with honors.
Professor Dunworthy, I just came to tell you.
I knew you would. I had complete faith in you, my boy. That's why I gave you a hard assignment, one of the hardest.
I'm sorry, Professor Dunworthy.
What's that?
I'm sorry I broke your classes, and I'm sorry I called you a dirty, nasty spy.
You were understandably upset.
And I suppose I will always be a historian, sir, whether anyone pays me or not.
She got over the cold and survived the Blitz, your Frieda.
She lived? I've been searching the archives, but I...
But I wrote the book, young man. You may have your doctorate, but there is still much for you to learn. A lifetime of learning. Young Heinrich was killed in the Baedeker raids on Bath. But Frieda migrated to Canada. She lived until 2012, the year before they blew up St. Paul's and all of London.
Frieda lived. And Langby?
There's no record currently known. He may have died in the hospital. He may have lived.
Frieda lived. Once. And this is the big secret of time travel.
Of course.
But nobody is saved. And everyone is saved.
This is the big secret of history, Dr. Bartholomew. How did you like St. Paul's?
I loved it, sir.
Yes. So do I.
It is now tea time. Departmental timepieces recalibrated.
Where does the time go? Well, why don't we have some brought in? What do you say, Dr. Bartholomew?
I'd like that, sir.
The future is uncertain. Our time is fleeting fast. Such a quiet night. Stars are shining bright. We mourn along.
Well, I usually don't make you get out your field guides after playing somebody else's production, but that's because they usually do a good job of going over the cast and crew for the production themselves. But in this case, they didn't, so I'd like to give some credit to the people that made this production happen. So, as for cast, we have Sebastian Roche as Bartholomew, Rika Daniel as Frieda, Ian Reed as Langby, George Holmes as Professor Dunworthy, and also included in the cast were Rita Ben-Orr, Anthony Ferguson, Nicholas Haylett, Gideon Juvenal, Ron Keith, Giovanni Pucci, John Rainier, Dieter Riesel, Vicky Stewart, Felix Van Dyke, and Nikki as the cat. Also some members of the crew and people responsible for the production. This was produced and directed by George Czar. Sound design was by John Colucci. Vocalists were Paul Amadio and Sherry Leone. Guitars were by John Colucci and Robert LeGault. Original lyrics were by Tony Daniel, and original music was by George Czar. So I guess now to the story itself, Firewatch. It's interesting listening to this story after I've already read some of Connie Willis's books. I recognize a lot of the characters, especially Professor Dunworthy. And I guess I come at it from a different perspective as someone who this story is their first introduction to this future Oxford universe that Connie Willis has created. But especially right now reading Blackout, which is very much about the London Blitz and World War II and all the things that are going on in this story correlate directly with that book. And of course, Firewatch was written first, then the two books before Blackout, you know, talked about other things rather than World War II. Well, I guess To Say Nothing of the Dog focuses on the events of World War II as well. But the main action in that story takes place in the Victorian era. There is something about that World War II era. You know, in many ways, it's been done to death. You know, it's been used in so many ways over the years. References to Nazis and to Hitler have almost become a cliche. It's almost been shrouded by common usage, where stories like this and movies like Schindler's List and things like that really bring back the reality of World War II and the reality of what Hitler was trying to accomplish in the mind of the Third Reich. And the Nazi movement was huge, and it very well came close to succeeding in taking over Europe. In this day and age, I think we tend to forget that. You know, that old adage, those that don't learn their history are doomed to repeat it. And it's very interesting also when you have a personal connection. And I don't even have any relatives that I know of that had served in World War II. But my mother-in-law, who passed away several years ago, was actually born in Kiel, Germany in 1941. And she grew up in Germany until she was 13 years old when she came to the United States. And her father, my wife's grandfather, actually served in the German army as a captain during World War II. And we don't really know, you know, what action he saw or where he was stationed or anything like that. But as you hopefully know, you know, being a German at that time did not mean that you were a Nazi. Even those serving in the military were not necessarily beholden to the ideals of the Nazi movement. In fact, Walter, my wife's grandfather, was initially unwilling to join the army. You know, I don't know what means he would have had not to during that time, but he also cared about these young men that were in the army, and he thought, you know, who else will take care of these boys? And Walter was actually shot by one of his own men. He was hard of hearing, and upon approaching a guard post, he did not hear the other soldier call for him and ask for the password. And so he didn't give the password, and he was shot. And when this soldier realized that he had shot his captain, he was devastated and never forgave himself. And I'd love one day to go with my wife to Germany and to look up some of these places and to look up some of these names of her family. Another story from that time period in Germany, from my mother-in-law's life. Her family had a German shepherd named Haras. Of course, if you're going to be in Germany, you should have a German shepherd. And Haras was a fully trained police dog. In fact, he was such a valuable dog that the German army was interested in enlisting him as a guard dog on the front lines. But I guess that didn't happen. When my mother-in-law, her name is Karen, was a little baby, she was put down to bed, and her mother was visiting with fellow tenants in another room, and suddenly Haras began to bark loudly at the door. And they just thought he wanted to go outside, so they let him out. Or at least they opened the door to let him out, but instead of running outside, the dog ran directly to Karen's room outside her door and continued to bark excitedly. And in confusion and probably a little bit of fear, Karen's mother ran into the room and swept the baby up in her arms and left the room. And as the story goes, seconds after fleeing the bedroom, a bomb landed outside of the building, and the wall near Karen's cradle came crashing in. And continuing to run for safety, Karen's mother, you know, fled outside of the home with the dog close behind. And then another bomb exploded outside of their home, and it knocked them to the ground. And then when the dust settled, they were safe, but Haras, the dog, had been caught in the blast and had died. And so That story had been told to Karen since she was a little girl, and it's been passed down to her children. And so they talk about how heroic this dog had been and how it saved Karen's life. That's a pretty amazing story, and it shows the dangers of the war on both sides. But again, I think things like this get forgotten as we get caught up in our day-to-day lives. But in different times of my life, I've been interested in learning more about World War II and the many different facets of it. You know, like in this story, we have the Blitz on London, where there was bombers every night coming in and blasting the city with its bombs. I had never heard about St. Paul's Cathedral and that such effort and dedication was put forth to preserve it. And of course, had I lived in London, I would know that right away. Or if I had visited there. I've never been over to Europe before. I've been to China, but I've never been to Europe. And so again, that is definitely a place I would want to visit. But a lot of focus is always on the battles and who won this and the strategic points of the war. And that is very interesting, and I enjoy knowing those things. But thinking about the day-to-day lives of these people that live there that directly faced the threat of the Nazi invasion, it's pretty incredible, and I can understand why so many stories and movies and books talk about World War II, because it really was a turning point for the world in many ways. But I guess since I'm on the subject again of time travel, and I guess also of World War II, but there's a couple other things that I've seen recently that come to mind as I'm talking about this. The first thing that I thought of was it's an episode of Doctor Who. In this episode, titled The Empty Child, they land the TARDIS, which is the time-traveling device, if you don't know anything about Doctor Who. He flies around with various companions in his TARDIS, which stands for Time and Relative Dimension in Space, if you were curious. But anyway, they land the TARDIS in London during the Blitz, and the Doctor and his companion, Rose Tyler, get separated. And there's this little boy that's wearing a gas mask. And he's going around and basically, he shows up at various times. And when he shows up, the only thing he says is, "Are you my mummy? Are you my mummy? Is my mummy in there? I want my mummy. Are you my mummy?" And it's really kind of spooky, because again, he's got this radiation mask on, which, I talked about in The Mask of the Red Death. That just that image in itself kind of gives me the creeps. But there's this little boy in knickers running around with this gas mask and keeps asking, "Are you my mummy?" And the phone will ring and they'll answer it and it'll continue to say, "Are you my mummy?" And it'll come on the radio and wherever he's at. And turns out there's a bunch of these other people that are kind of linked to him that also have gas masks. And it turns out that the gas mask is actually part of their face. And there's a whole explanation for it with an alien and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot to explain in the episode. I'm not going to do that right now. I'm just going to, point you toward that. You can find it on Netflix if you'd like. It's, again, the first season, titled The Empty Child. But on the other side of that, Rose Tyler hears this boy and sees him up on top of a building, and she goes up to find him, and she sees a rope where she can climb to get where he is, and she finds herself hanging precariously from a barrage balloon and flying over the skies of London as the bombers come through and are bombing the city. So, and there's anti-aircraft going on, and here she is dangling from this barrage balloon. And that's actually something else I've learned in reading about the Blitz, is, what are these barrage balloons? They look like this balloon that's shaped like a blimp. But, there's these balloons, and tethered to them are these metal cables that hang down below the balloon. And the intent is to defend against low-level aircraft, that they'll get damaged or tangled up in these cords. But, that's something I never thought of, never knew about. So that's interesting. But again, Rose is saved from that. And again, there's a lot more going on in this episode. But I encourage you to go check it out. Well, I know this episode is long already, so I'm going to go ahead and end it. But I really hope you enjoyed this story. I'm excited that I was able to find a Connie Willis story to share with you. And I'll keep working on more. As always, feel free to visit our forums at journeyinto.freeforums.org. And you can visit our website at journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. And if you have any submissions, you can read the submission guidelines, which can be found on the website if you scroll down to all the links on the right-hand side there. So until next time, be careful out there and journey on.
Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey of the Roundtable Podcast.
And we wanted to let you know that this episode of the Journey Into Podcast is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 license.
Yes, that's right. So it's like everybody gathering together and sharing their stuff with each other. Although, you have to say where you got it from.
Right. Yeah, because, and you can't sell it for money, right?
Right, and you can't chop it up and change it and make it all kinds of differentness.
But you can share it, because that's what the whole Creative Commons thing is about.
And it just makes me feel all warm and gooey inside.
Me too, me too. I just, yes. You know, group hug, man, right now, you and
that's
me.
That's right.